You're listening to the Vermont Edition podcast. This is Meg Malone, the Vermont Edition digital producer, just here to let you know that this episode has been edited for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. They're definitely back in my neck of the woods, the hordes of mosquitoes that descend on Vermont when the weather turns warm, like ill-mannered tourists clogging the woods and trails and staying way longer than anyone would like. Vermont has about 45 species of mosquitoes, and although most of them don't pester humans, and although only the females even take a blood meal at all, these bugs are the ruination of many a good picnic, hike, or trip to the lake. Those in more urban environments may find them pretty manageable, but out in the woods and fields, they are a real menace. And they can sometimes carry diseases, too, which is why state officials keep an eye on their populations. Today on the show, we're going to talk about the mosquitoes that live here, who they are, how they multiply, and in what limited cases officials actually take steps to control them. Plus, what diseases you should be on the lookout for and how you can protect yourself. Joining me in the studio are Patty Casey, Environmental Surveillance Program Director for the Agency of Agriculture, and Natalie Quitt, State Public Health Veterinarian. It's nice to have you both here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And it's nice to be in a studio where there are no mosquitoes, because I was out this weekend and out with my kids in the woods, and they weren't here last weekend, and they are here now, at least in Addison County, and out in force. I mean, just hordes of them, swarms of them. You look down and there's 30 on your legs, and it seems like it happens all of a sudden very quickly. Patty Casey, are they just waiting for the right environment, the right weather combinations to breed, and then it happens really just like that?
Well, as you mentioned at the top, there are 45 different species in the state, so they have wildly divergent breeding habits. There are some that will lay their eggs at the edge of a floodplain, and they can last a couple of years, 2 or 3 years, until the water reaches that point again, at which point they can hatch. There are some that will lay their eggs in your tire swing or your kiddie pool or your eaves if they're not cleaned out. There are a lot that are called floodplain species. So that's very likely what you ran into. There are also species called treehole species that at this time of year, there are a lot of vernal pools, which are spring little pockets, little pools of water in the woods that are a result of snowmelt and all the rain and the frost coming up out of the ground. So what happens is when the water temperature reaches a certain point, a lot of those eggs do hatch. They go through their four stages as larvae and pupae, and then it's called coming off. They literally come off the water as adults. They tend to do it in swarms of millions, and it tends to happen at this time of year because they take advantage of they're really good at what they do. So they all come off at the same time, and they all go out looking. They breed, and then they feed. So they were looking to make eggs when they were looking to feed on you and your family. So you were not imagining it. There's a lot of standing water this spring, and
yeah,
that's what's happening.
And do all types of mosquitoes, or at least the 45 species that we have here, all of them require water to go through their life cycle? So the water is a key component here for all mosquitoes?
That's correct. So their early stages, egg and larva and pupa, those three stages all require water, and then they are terrestrial after that. So any way that you have that you can get rid of sort of man-made created water around you that's, you know, just sort of standing water in areas around your home or farm, you'll be doing yourself a favor if you can get rid of that.
And, you know, when we look at where mosquitoes already are and what the conditions are for mosquitoes to breed and then to be out and to come off and to look for these hosts, including us, are we seeing them all around the state now, or are they starting to emerge in different pockets of the state depending on the sort of weather and temperature and conditions in the state?
This is a time of year when they tend to be the worst. There are areas of the state where there are extensive swampy areas, and they tend to have more breeding habitat than other areas. Water temperature is critical to the larval development, so it can double – cold water temperatures can double the time, the amount of time it takes for an egg to go through its development and to hatch and to come off as an adult. So it can be a week or 2 weeks depending on the water temperature.
But so you can't like run up to the kingdom right now to get away from the mosquitoes. You're going to see them anywhere in the state now? You're
probably going to see them anywhere in the state as the water is warming up. Yeah.
So Natalie, quick, I mentioned 45 different kinds of mosquitoes. How do us normal humans who are not studying mosquitoes, how many do we even notice? Is it just, you know, the Anopheles mosquitoes and the couple that bite us that we're paying attention to? Or could we actually see all of these other mosquito species around?
I would have to defer to Patty about the specific species that might be out and active this time of the year. However,
I mean, in general.
In general, there are only, you know, certain species that will attack and bite mammals and particularly humans. So, and those are the mosquitoes we worry about in carrying infectious diseases. The two that we are most worried about are West Nile virus and Eastern equine encephalitis virus here in the state of Vermont. So while we have lots of mosquitoes biting us right now and they're very active, luckily we don't see positive or mosquitoes carrying these viruses until about mid to late June. Usually early July, but last year we saw our first mosquito positive pool, which is a group of 50 or less mosquitoes of the same species from the same site that were carrying West Nile virus.
All right. So right now it's fine. They're just annoying.
Yeah, pretty much they are. They're not carrying diseases right now, luckily, but you still want to start, you know, protecting yourself because those bites can be itchy and painful.
Brent emailed in to say, my girlfriend Brenda and I hiked up to Silver Lake in Salisbury yesterday. Quickly, I was reminded that I forgot bug spray. When we got up to the lake, the mosquitoes were so bad swarming. There should be a sign at the trail beginning warning for awareness because of all the diseases, etc. I completely forgot, this being my first hike of the year. And Irene in Lancaster, New Hampshire says, the first long weekend of the summer season started out pretty darn good until Saturday evening when our alfresco dinner quickly moved indoors as black flies swarmed around our heads and mosquitoes nibbled at our ankles in Gill Hall. So, yes, you can join the chorus of people who don't like mosquitoes. I have yet to see somebody who really does like mosquitoes, except perhaps people who make their living studying mosquitoes. At least, you know, mosquitoes are partly responsible for your paycheck, I suppose. That's a good thing. But those of you who don't, again, if you have questions, our number is 800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.org. Patty Casey, how many species do actually bite us of the 45?
Boy, I don't have an exact number for that. Typically, what we see over the course of a mosquito season, which we consider to be starting, depending on weather, and they can start as early as May and go into as late as the beginning of November. We typically see a couple dozen species, and of those, the really awful characters are, there's probably 8 or 10 species that we see a lot of.
But when you say really awful characters, because of the diseases they transmit, or just because they're the most annoying?
They're the most abundant, and they feed on mammals. So those 8 or 10 species can also be rolling. So right now what we're getting is the floodplain species, which will die off to some extent. And it's cool to look at maps. You can go online and find maps that show the peaks of different mosquito species, their population peaks during the season. So right now we're seeing – I won't blind people with boring genus species names, but there are a lot of floodplain species and vernal pool and treehole species that we're seeing now. As those waters dry up and the riverbanks recede, there could be another flush as the water pulls back in, and then we're on to different species. Cattail, there's a specific cattail species of mosquito that the population tends to peak June, July, and then we tend to see different species coming in later in the summer and through. And some of them, there are some that are pretty consistent. And as Natalie mentioned, the ones that we're sort of most concerned about are the ones that are mammal biters. And there are a couple of species that are not just mammal biters, but they have evolved alongside people and our containers. and our wastewater treatment facilities and you know, areas where they will always be able to find standing water. So, and then they, it's like they come off and it's like a buffet. So they come off and they're right there, right beside their host, which is us in our houses.
Well done, mosquitoes, though.
Exactly.
I mean, that is, yeah. They've done well. They are smarter than we are.
They are very successful. And one quick thing I just wanted to say, you said no one likes them except maybe Natalie and I, but there are, I did a little research and a couple of these I knew about, but I figure it's worth pointing out that there's a place for all God's creatures, and the larvae filter water, so they actually can clean up water, and they're a food source both as larvae and as adults, and adults are little tiny pollinators. So it's in our hatred and loathing of them, it's important to remember that they serve a function.
And they're food for a lot of other animals, aren't they? I mean,
they
a lot
are.
Of birds and
yep.
bugs are eating them and
both,
frogs and stuff.
Yep, larvae and adults are a huge part of the food chain.
So. See? So, you know, find some place in your heart for a small appreciation of the mosquito, especially maybe if you're indoors. Amanda's calling in from Hyde Park. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, go right ahead.
It may be a silly question, but I have mosquitoes really love me, I feel. I can be standing next to a couple people and they're like all over me and not necessarily the other people. And I was wondering if that was like something in my blood or a scent, and if there's anything I can do to like prevent them other than a really strong bug repellent. I don't really like to use those.
And a stern look. Amanda, thanks for the call. Natalie quit. What about it? Anything she can do? And why? I mean, it really is the case that some people get bitten more than others. And do we know why?
Yeah, it seems that way. But I'm not sure I have any scientific evidence to point to that why mosquitoes love some humans over others, or it seems to be that way. But as far as protecting yourself against mosquito bites, certainly using EPA registered repellents is going to be number one, especially on exposed skin. You know, if that doesn't sound appealing, you can also wear long pants and long sleeves. Again, doesn't sound so appealing on hot summer nights. But you can also treat your clothing with something called permethrin ahead of time and let that dry on your clothes and wear your clothing to help repel mosquitoes. You can even buy clothing that has already been pre-treated with permethrin. Again, limiting your outdoor time to avoid the dusk and dawn times of day where mosquitoes might be a little bit more active. And as Patty said, removing standing water around your home as much as possible.
But I have heard that there is research into different types of people. And I've heard, I mean, some of this, I guess, is still open to interpretation, but there have been studies that suggest that women are more likely to be bitten more than men. I've heard that your blood type can also have an impact. So O blood is particularly appealing to mosquitoes, and that, you know, pregnant women are more appealing to mosquitoes, which maybe has something to do with body temperature or something that the mosquitoes are seeing. Have you heard any of that, Patty? Any of it that rings true?
I have heard some of that, and I haven't dived too deeply into the research on that. There has been research, though, recently, and some stuff has come across my desk that I haven't been able to look into too much, but there's some molecular composition in some of us that make us more appealing than other people. Mosquitoes are attracted to carbon dioxide, which is what we exhale, and as does everything out there. They can follow a vapor trail up to, some of them, up to a mile and a half.
So stop breathing and you'll be okay.
Stop breathing. Maybe we could make masks that, you know, that filter out the carbon dioxide, but they'll sort of hone in on the CO2 trail. When they get close enough, they look for motion, and then they really zero in on temperature. So it could be people that are more active. I know that they say that people that swat at themselves a lot tend to be bothered more.
Which is a chicken and egg thing, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. How do you not swat at them? I guess, you know, you put your insect repellent on and that will keep them off you.
Jeff is with us from Mallets Bay. Jeff, hi. You have a question?
Yeah, I do. It seems like last year, all of a sudden, we got a new breed of mosquito in the Bay. Used to mosquitoes that come out of dark, bigger, kind of lazy flyers, buyers. You can hear them with the buzzing. These little ones, it started swarming last year. lightweight. They're out in the sunniest parts of the day. It's hellacious. You try to hang some laundry, and it's really awful. You let the dogs in and out, and you're panicked at the front door trying to open it and shut it as quick as you can. And then you sit in your living room and kill about seven or eight that made it in the door with the dog. I'm wondering why all of a sudden this new breed of mosquito has been set upon us starting last summer.
Jeff, thanks for the call. So do either of you see this, a difference in population density or areas where these mosquitoes come and go, and what Jeff might be noticing with a difference between a bigger, slower, maybe dumber mosquito that used to be out more in the evening versus these small, sort of wily ones that are getting in his house?
Actually, it's not a new breed or anything like that. We do like any wild population. We see, you know, an overabundance one year and then not quite so much the next year. What Jeff is referring to are what we call day biters. They are fast and small. And there was a huge amount of them in Colchester last year. I got several calls from people, and I went out and my agency does surveillance. It's a program that I direct. We do statewide surveillance for mosquitoes. And so I went out and took a look at several places in Colchester. And there was – last year, there was a lot – again, there was a lot of standing water. And there was a bend in the river that I located near some particularly urgent complaints that had backed up. And there was a lot of kind of backwash from that. So I expect that might have been where – some of their problems were coming from.
And let's go to Michael calling in from Windsor. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane. I'm calling about what insects are attracted to it. It fits in a little bit what your guest said a moment ago about the carbon dioxide. I see humans trying to control mosquitoes around their picnic sites and all with bug zappers. And I'm certain they do not control mosquitoes. They do not attract them. And let me tell you the foundation of my belief. I studied entomology at Penn State and agriculture, and I had to collect mosquitoes for a project there called it was called a living filter, where they sprayed effluent in a forest and they wanted to see if it changed, if the increased water changed the mosquito population. So I had to put out traps and collect thousands of mosquitoes and identify them. And I used a little CDC light trap and with carbon dioxide wrapped in newspaper hung up on a string. I never used a black light trap, and I collected thousands of mosquitoes. And I had to separate the males from the females and identify them. And then I also collected agricultural and forest pests with black light traps. And I got a lot of beneficial insects in the black light traps, like ichneumonid wasps and beetles and moths. And so it just frustrates me that people in our ignorance put up bug zappers thinking they're going to keep mosquitoes away, when what the mosquitoes were attracted to in my research project was the carbon dioxide in the form of dry ice, and then this little incandescent light bulb in the trap with the fan below it blew the mosquitoes into a net. And so I wish maybe you could start the movement to get the news out that we're just destroying many beneficial insects by using bug zappers, and we're not really touching the mosquitoes.
Michael, so, thanks for the call. I appreciate that, and hearing about your research, which sounds fascinating and interesting to hear about what you attracted using different kinds of techniques. I feel like I see many fewer bug zappers these days than I did as a child in Vermont in the 80s. So I don't know if people are using them as much now as they used to. But interesting point. And Michael, thank you for making it. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Natalie Quitt is Vermont's state public health veterinarian. Patty Casey is Environmental Surveillance Program Director for the Agency of Agriculture. They are talking mosquitoes with us today as the mosquito season just gets underway in our region. Let's go to James, who's calling in from Highgate Springs. Hi, James.
Yes. Hello, Jane. How are you?
Well, thanks.
Oh, good. Well, I just wanted to ask your guest, going back to the equine encephalitis and West Nile issues. I'm in Highgate Springs, And anecdotally, it seems that these pockets with these more dangerous two diseases have been very localized. I think a couple places in Madison County, but for a number of the last several years, it seems to me they've been within just a few miles of my home up here on the Siskoy Bay. And I kind of wanted to find out why so localized are these climate change factors contributing to that? And also, being that we live where these outbreaks are happening, even though the statewide statistics may not be terribly alarming, should we be more concerned or be taking more preventative methods if we're living in one of these tight little areas where these outbreaks keep happening?
James, thanks for the call. Okay, so a couple things to tease apart here. And first of all, we're talking about mosquito-borne illnesses. And Natalie Quitt, you mentioned earlier that the ones that we really worry about in Vermont are West Nile virus and Tripoli, Eastern equine encephalitis. So can you describe what those are? And then we can get into James's question about pinpointing the location, the geographical locations that these tend to crop up, where we're seeing these cases every year, and what James might be wanting to be aware of. But first of all, Tripoli and West Nile.
Sure. Let me start with West Nile virus, which has been identified in every county of the state since 2000, since the year 2000, actually. And from that, we've developed an interagency surveillance program between the Agency of Agriculture and Health Department, where we do mosquito surveillance and then test those mosquitoes for these viruses, West Nile virus and Tripoli, at our state health department lab.
Which we've been to, by the way, and we'll link to that interview on today's show page, because it was interesting to go see. It's like mosquito, I don't know, sort of like baby food. It's like turns into mush. It's like this liquid. Anyway, we went and saw how you test the mosquitoes, but go on.
Correct. Yeah. So West Nile virus is a flavivirus, again, transmitted by mosquitoes, and it's maintained in birds in their natural cycle and transmitted to humans via a mosquito-bird transmission cycle, primarily involving Culex mosquitoes. And the majority of humans that get infected actually do not get sick with it. So that's about 80% will never know that they were infected. They just don't get sick. But however, 20% of those infected develop a febrile illness. Less than 1% of those infected develop a severe neurologic illness, such as encephalitis or meningitis or inflammation of the brain or spinal cord, which can be fatal in a small percentage of cases. People over 50 years of age and those with weakened immune systems tend to be the greatest risk for severe illness due to West Nile virus. So that's why we do this mosquito surveillance. It's an active surveillance system, so we can see where West Nile virus might be circulating throughout the state. We do tend to expect to see it everywhere, but there are some pockets where we see a little bit more activity than others, such as last year we saw a lot of activity in Springfield. However, we only get about 0 to 3 human cases of West Nile virus per year. Again, that's either because the majority of people don't get sick or they get this febrile illness and they don't get diagnosed. So we tend to hear more about those more severe cases that get diagnosed and reported to the health department.
On the other hand, Triple E, if a human contracts Eastern equine encephalitis, that often is more serious and dangerous for a human.
Correct, yeah. And that's why we're always testing those mosquito pools for Triple E as well. Well, we've had Triple E virus activity in the state first identified in 2010 through a deer and moose serosurvey. And then we actually had an outbreak here in 2012 was the highest activity year. We actually had 2 human deaths. And that's why we are very concerned about that one, because up to a third of people who are sick with the virus do die. So it's a lot more severe than West Nile virus.
And James was saying in Highgate Springs, so, you know, up near the Canadian border, he says he always seemed to find this right near where I am. What's up with these little pockets? And you know, what do we need to know about that?
In general, we don't divvy down too much into little pockets. We do see, when we do see positives, we have Patty can talk a little bit more about the sites, the selection throughout the state for surveillance. But we do notify the town health officer and the health department district office every time we find a mosquito pool positive, and give them messaging to help them inform their communities when we are seeing positives. However, you know, we need to remember that there's a little bit of a lag time between when mosquitoes are collected, you know, identified, process, submitted to the health department lab, and then tested before we have that information. So it can be a 1 to 2 week turnaround time. So oftentimes we're getting this information a little late. So we want people to protect themselves throughout the mosquito season, particularly when we know virus is being more actively circulated between mosquitoes starting at the end of June, early July. However, highest risk to humans, and when we start to see human cases more often in September, October.
Mm-hmm. So when people are sort of starting to forget that mosquitoes are around.
Correct. Yeah, they're not as hyper aware as we are right now when you're feeling all the mosquito bites, but they are. That is actually when or people might be getting lackadaisical with their personal protection behaviors. And so, but we want people to remember that those are the highest risk times.
You also test for Zika and malaria, which are not in our region, or at least not usually. So why are you testing for that?
Correct. We do surveillance for other mosquito-borne diseases that are not indigenous to Vermont. It's because people travel to areas where they are. So malaria, dengue, chikungunya, and Zika virus. So we still, those are reportable in the state because we want to know if people have been infected, and we do provide testing for some of those as well.
And are you testing humans or are you testing mosquitoes?
We're testing humans because we're only collecting mosquitoes from Vermont. However, Patty can talk a little bit more about that too, as we are, they are doing surveillance for one of the vectors for Zika virus that has a little bit more of a northern range, Aedes albopictus.
And Patty, do you expect to see that in Vermont?
I don't expect to see it in Vermont. And that said, there are some circumstances under which it could show up. It does not seem as though our current climate would allow for the Aedes albopictus species to survive our winters. It is a southern, subtropical, and southern species. The last couple of years I started a study. It's called an oviposition study, in which we go out looking for – we leave attractive habitat for mosquitoes to lay their eggs on, and then we check the – eggs and rear them, which is with marginal success. But we're actually sending our eggs off this year to be reared by someone else who knows what they're doing. So that whole study is to look for Aedes albopictus, which is one of the primary Zika vectors. How they could show up here, it's kind of a funny or an odd circumstance, and that is that they are container breeders. They like tires. So one of the places that I'm going and setting up my traps this year, several places actually of this ilk, are tire sales places where new tires are coming in. But an odd place to look for them, but one where they have been found, is rest areas on the major routes into a state, because a trucker with a truckload of tires can stop and spend the night. And if the timing is such that the mosquitoes come off from those tires, they could start a local population that would only be alive and extant as long as those mosquitoes were alive. So they would be killed out. They'd knock down with the first cold weather.
But in the meantime, they could bite someone and cause a problem.
They would be unlikely to have the Zika, they would be unlikely to be carrying the virus, because I don't believe it's transmitted transovarially.
As in through the eggs. You can't right. be born, the mosquito wouldn't be born with Zika.
I'm going to defer to Natalie on that, but
Natalie's giving a silent correct. Yeah.
Okay, good. So when they come off as adults, they would not be infected with the Zika virus, to my knowledge. That I may be able to be corrected on that.
Which is another reason why we want to do human surveillance for Zika virus, because that could infect, you know, the local competent vector, which can infect other humans. So
in other words, if the mosquito bit you and you have Zika, then it might have Zika and it could go bite somebody else.
Correct. So we want to know anyone who's coming back from an area where Zika virus is transmitted, that if they can be viremic.
So Doug wants to know, Doug says, we have a small ornamental pond about 25 feet by 10 feet and 4 feet deep. And I'm wondering if there are any small native fish species recommended for mosquito control in small ponds in Vermont, and where can we get some if there are? So, you know, as we're looking at ways to try to prevent them, sure, get the water out of your tires, but what do you do if you have a little pond? Anything you can do?
Yes. We don't recommend introducing non-native species because of the invasive potential. You can get something called Dunks at the hardware store, and we do recommend that. It's called a larvicide because it kills the larva. It is Bacillus thuringiensis, which is it's a bacteria, so it's considered a natural pesticide. I'm saying with air quotes, but it does target mosquito larvae very closely, so there's minimal non-target kill. So that's what we would recommend. And I think it's 100 square feet per dunk, so he would probably need three dunks spread out evenly. And they you can get different strengths. They can last for 30 days or 45 days, I guess, depending on the formulation of the pesticide in it.
But no little native fish species that you should be getting to?
You'd have to talk to Fish and Wildlife about introducing fish into a body of water.
Well, what about this? Arlene says, Arlene also has a small pond, one of the delights of her yard with special plantings around it. So if the water is disturbed by a fountain, is that enough of a deterrent?
Generally, yes. Mosquitoes need still water. They don't like movement for laying their eggs. So
Christine wants to know if the diminished bat populations due to white nose syndrome have had an effect on mosquito numbers. Have either of you seen that at all?
I was just speaking with someone yesterday on Friday about the potential for that. There's several factors that, climate change is affecting a lot of things. And the bat population, it is potentially a casualty of some of the climate change stuff. Bats are predators of mosquitoes. So it's quite possible that a lowering of that of a predator species is going to allow for at least a temporary increase in the prey species.
But you haven't seen that so far? Because we have seen a quite diminished bat population over the last several years.
We don't really do bat studies. I know, I believe Fish and
the purposes of our surveillance is more for human health risk communication. So we're not really doing it as far as an overall mosquito population survey.
So you don't even know if we're actually seeing more mosquitoes now than normal?
Well, we do. I mean, we know what we trap. So the surveillance program, the environmental health surveillance program is, if you go on our website, you can see over the years the different species composition, the numbers of what species we see in overall numbers. For instance, last year, overall mosquitoes collected in our surveillance program was down by about a third, which was surprising because the year started off with a lot of phone calls. And a really bad mosquito, burst at the beginning of the season. And then we got hit by a drought and we were, I had a man call me very worried because he didn't have any mosquitoes at his house. It's the only time I've ever gotten a call like that.
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition, and today we're talking mosquitoes with Natalie Quitt, Vermont State Public Health Veterinarian, and Patty Casey, Environmental Surveillance Program Director for the Agency of Agriculture. And we're getting extra music because we're so excited about the mosquitoes today. Let's start with the mosquito control districts. There are two in the state. One is the BLSG Insect Control District that covers Brandon, Lester, Salisbury, Goshen, and Pittsford. I don't know why Pittsford gets left out of that acronym. No P. We need a P on the end of that. That was formed in 1990. And then there's the Lemonfair Insect Control District, which was formed in 2006 and covers Bridport, Cornwall, and Weybridge. So first of all, Patty, why are there two mosquito control districts and why are there only two mosquito control districts? And are they state or are they local control?
It's an interesting cooperation. The BLSGP, we actually do tag the P on
you
there.
You put the P on?
So, yeah, we've had a fairness to Pittsford. Yep. They're in Rutland County, and the other district is the Lemon Fair Insect Control District in Addison. They are municipal entities. And the reason that they exist, they came together on their own. They, sort of banded together in a way that made geographic sense because there are a lot of swamps, swampy, wet areas over in both of those where the districts are located. So the towns that are part of these insect control districts each pay in a percentage or a tax out of their tax base. It goes toward the insect control district. And what the state provides is out of the general fund, and that is an amount of money that the legislature determines, and that is split between the districts. And that funding is used only for larvaciding. So both of those districts engage in larvaciding, which is applying, as I mentioned before, larvicide is a pesticide, basically, that it's a natural pesticide, a bacteria that kills larvae. It's either applied by hand or from a backpack sprayer, and it can be aerially applied if there is a large enough area that needs to be treated, which can happen when the larvae get going like they're going right now. So the funding that goes to the districts from through the Agency of Agriculture, but from the general fund, is like I said, the legislature determines that amount. So and that money is used only for killing larvae, not for killing adult mosquitoes. The Brandon, Lester, Salisbury, Goshen, Pittsford district, BLSGP, located in Brandon, they also engage in adulticiding. So they have trucks that spray parts of the town and kill adult mosquitoes.
And that's done through municipal funds.
Yes. The state funding does not pay for any of that.
So let's go to some calls on this. Gary's calling in from Lester. Hi, Gary. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. I live in Lester around Lake Dunmore, and the mosquitoes have been as bad as I've ever seen them. And I'm wondering why the larvicide wasn't applied. Apparently, it's a funding issue. There was a permit issued for a helipad, and apparently there's a funding issue with the larvicide and specifically the aerial application of that.
Gary, thanks for the call. Let me pair you with a couple others here, because I think you're all on a similar line of questioning here. And it looks like most of you are from the BLSGP district. So Ben's calling in from Goshen. Ben, go ahead.
Hi, Jane. Ben Lawton. I'm the public health officer for the town of Goshen. I'm also affiliated or chairman of the Mosquito Control District, but I belong to the National Association of County Health City Health Officials. There's a recent article in there that John Conlon wrote, and spoke about the general public being chromophobic, or chemophobic, I'm sorry, and people don't remember that vector-borne diseases of past, yellow fever, malaria, were very common in the United States. They're not common anymore because the public health infrastructure, including the vector control, has been instituted in our country. My question again is on the same line. The SMASH Act that was passed by the Congress provided additional funding for mosquito control, and I'm wondering, do any of those funds filter into Vermont?
Yeah, Ben, thanks for the call. We'll let you go answer that other phone call that's coming in. So questions about why not more funding, why not more more money from the state for larvicide for these places where there is a need or a desire, at least, to control the mosquito populations. Patty Casey?
That is determined by legislature. So it's up to it's an issue that's fairly fraught, because some people really, really want there to be mosquito control, and some people really, really don't want there to be mosquito control, and they're concerned about any pesticides at all being applied into the environment. So the funding, you know, it is something that we feel that towns and the people that live there should be able to decide how they want it done. They are the mosquito control districts are really, they make those determinations on a town-by-town basis whether they're going to apply only adulticide or only larvicide or to throw in an adulticide. The funding is what it is. It comes from the state.
So, Natalie Quitt, given that there's not going to be a lot of control of mosquitoes done through larvicide, through spraying, and many of us around the state are in places where there are a lot of mosquitoes, you mentioned earlier one way is just to prevent mosquito bites is to not be out at dawn and dusk when the mosquitoes are particularly active. Not an option for many people. Another way is to make sure that you're wearing long clothing. But what are some of the chemical-based or treatment-based topical kind of repellents that we can think about using to try to prevent mosquito bites?
Sure. We recommend EPA-registered repellents, and that's because EPA has studied them for their both safety and for efficacy purposes. These include DEET, picaridin, oil of lemon eucalyptus, among others. And you can actually find a whole list of them and find your, you know, repellent tool at EPA. .gov or the CDC website that also lists effective natural repellents as well. And I wanted to clarify that permethrin should only be used on clothing, not on bare skin, especially not cats either, because it can be toxic to them.
But permethrin is one that's also recommended for repelling ticks. So that may be a good option for people who are out in the woods and worried about both ticks and mosquitoes.
Correct.
It's effective for both.
Correct. A lot of those that I just listed are effective for both.
And oil of lemon eucalyptus is one that for a long time people have been saying, hey, this is effective and it's not DEET. Should people be concerned about DEET, or do you see this chemical as something that's less detrimental than the potential for one of the diseases that you might get from an insect?
DEET is very safe, up to even a 30% concentration. So, again, I would rely on EPA studies to say how safe and effective those are.
Gordon in Hinesburg says a friend recommended tea tree oil to repel mosquitoes, which I found worked well, non-toxic, natural, and smells nice. I've also been told that eating garlic helps your BO repel insects. Seriously, can your guest confirm or comment? Natalie, any idea about garlic?
I can't confirm either of those. Again, I would check the EPA web page for that, but I'm not aware that either of those are meant to be effective.
What do you use?
I use DEET. I like picaridin because it's not as stinky, I guess.
Patty Casey, what do you do? How do you avoid mosquitoes?
I do use DEET. I'm out in the woods a lot. I use permethrin treated clothing, and I also have something called a bug baffler, which when I'm going out into the heavily infested mosquito areas, it's a net shirt with a hood on it that zips closed.
And you may look silly, but it's effective.
Oh, it's a great look.
And I don't want to forget about our animals as well. I didn't mention that, you know, animals such as horses and camelids like llamas and alpacas are susceptible. So talk to your veterinarian about a vaccination program.
Patty Casey is Environmental Surveillance Program Director for the Agency of Agriculture. Natalie Quitt is Vermont's State Public Health Veterinarian. Thanks very much to both of you for talking mosquitoes with us today.
You're welcome.